Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
As the US election heads into an incredibly consequential election on Tuesday, not just for Americans, but for the whole world, the only certainty, it seems, is a pervading sense of uncertainty. The stakes are high and the polls between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump are just too close to call. So I've deployed the help of Pulitzer Prize winning author Richard Ford to help us parse it all. Richard Ford, good morning. I know it's very early probably for you in Montana, but tell me, how are your pre-election nerves?
Well, my pre-election nerves have been salved somewhat by my wife and me already having voted. That sort of gets a certain, you know, certain level of anxiety settled for ourselves. Other than that, we spent all last week grouse shooting in northern Maine as a way of sort of allaying for ourselves the anxiety.
Getting rid of some of the adrenaline. And of course, millions have already gone to early voting in the polls. But look, I want to bring you back. The last time you were on this show, Richard, President Biden was just about to bow out. And I think it would be probably fair to say that you weren't overly thrilled at the prospect of Kamala Harris as a candidate. Since then, how do you think she has performed in the campaign?
She's done as well as she can. That's what I think. She's a smart, attractive in the best way, not the Trumpian ways. The country should have a woman president. I mean, she qualifies. She qualifies to be president. Has she had the opportunity to bring all of her talents to bear on this election? No, she hasn't, because the Democrats fiddled around and let Biden sort of waste a lot of valuable time in the spring and last winter. They should have booted him out a long time ago. But given the restraints and constraints of the time that she's had to run for office, she's done about as well as one can hope.
Yeah,
she's not strong on details. She doesn't feel confident in, you know, Q&As with people when she doesn't have a script. And I think she's a little bit risk averse. But these things would, if she can get to be president, I think, these things will work themselves out.
Well, one person who definitely doesn't stick to the script is her opponent, Donald Trump. And I think, again, it would probably be fair to say that you're definitely not a fan. But, you know, the polls would not be so close.
No, he's a monster.
But the polls, Richard Ford, would not be so close unless he was reaching people. He has a constituency.
Correct.
He has a large base.
Correct. There's no doubt about it. All of these people, these sort of shade tree nihilists and anarchists and know-nothings and sort of cynically narcissistic politicians, they were always there. He just became their poster boy. And who he's really the poster boy for is all of those people who want to co-opt those narcissists and those know-nothings and nihilists and make money out of it. I just noticed yesterday that the owner of the Washington Post has declined to endorse a candidate. We need nothing more clarified than to see that this guy who owns the Washington Post, who's a billionaire, just doesn't want to come out on the wrong side if the election goes the way it might go.
Yeah, it caused chaos for there was lots of people pulling subscribers, the columnists and a lot of the staff were hugely upset about that, because it did seem like a big moment when the Washington Post, which is owned by Jeff Bezos. Look, does it show that perhaps newspaper endorsements still matter?
No, I think newspaper endorsements matter. There's no doubt about it. He just doesn't want to be on the losing end should Trump win. This is about money. I mean, I heard somebody say the other day, the Constitution's not for sale. Oh, yes, the Constitution is for sale, unquestionably.
Talk to me about how, because the world is watching. The world is watching. This is in this big consequential year of elections. This is the big one to watch. How do you see these final few days playing out? Look, I mean, what's the atmosphere like in a state like Montana, which is a red state? I mean, are people on edge about the outcome?
That's a question I don't think I can generalize about. I mean, it's a very big country with all these states, and they aren't all thinking and feeling the same ways. Around here in red state Montana, as you say, nobody has any Trump signs up for the most part. They feel so confident, the right wing does, that they're not even bothering to put yard art up in their houses. And you don't see really much yard art at all. You don't see Biden, Harris, stickers or posters, and you don't see Trump posters. So, I mean, I think people are internalizing a great deal of what they feel. The right wing thinks they're going to win, and the left wing, always rather tremulous, is just hoping if they just, you know, as my father used to say, hold their mouth right, that they'll luck into winning.
Yeah, I suppose it depends on the states, because there are other states, Pennsylvania, maybe Wisconsin, where literally there are yard battles and neighbours maybe afraid to speak to each other because all of it. Can I bring you back just the last couple of days? Look, there have been so many plots and pivot twists. You probably couldn't write this if you tried to write it as a novel, Richard. But, you know, just one of them in recent days were Donald Trump's bizarre vow that he would protect women, whether the women like it or not. And I'm just wondering, how are remarks like that going down? Who are they aimed at?
Well, they're aimed at his base, who like sort of garishly broad stroke statements like that. You know, when he says it, he doesn't know what the hell he's saying. He's just saying stuff. And it's not that he believes it or doesn't believe it. He just says it. And how does it go down? I mean, it goes down with about half of the population saying, oh, my Christ, what in the world? And half the population saying, right, that's how it ought to be. I mean, when you have a divided country, as we have a divided country, it really is divided about just such things as that stupidity.
There are a lot of people who are prepared perhaps to overlook those statements or other perceived personal flaws of Donald Trump and say, but yeah, he'll be good for the economy. You had one of those sort of dissonant moments recently on a flight, didn't you?
Oh, I did. Well, I try to engage people as much as I can because I'm flying around all the time these days. I met a woman who was a professor at the University of Virginia Law School. She basically just told me she thought that Kamala Harris would destabilize the economy and destabilize the country, and that she was going to vote for Trump irrespective of his personal flaws because she thought that he would stabilize our foreign relations, particularly our relations with Russia, and the economy as well. I mean, I was surprised just because my conception of who she was didn't provide that she would be a Trump voter, but she was a Trump voter. Nonetheless.
Yeah, and people will parse their votes accordingly. Can I ask you about maybe the, because obviously demographics plays a huge part and gender plays a huge part as well. Obviously, Kamala Harris has been very, very strong on reproductive rights, very strong kind of on the rights of women. Do you think that there will be a split along gender lines, particularly with this, you know, prospect that that the Democrats are losing votes with young black men, which they would traditionally have relied on, or perhaps other ethnic, you know, minority groups, you know, whether it's Latinos and others? Do you see those sort of schisms happening?
Well, we'll have to wait and see about that. I'm not going to concede that young African-American males are going to vote for Trump. That may be what the polls show, but it represents, I think, a wait-and-see attitude more than it represents, you know, a fascination with Trump or a support for Trump. I'm just not ready to concede that. About women and men, the gender lines, it just seems that more men than women like Trump and more women than men like Harris. And it seems to me that there is a gender split. What size represent what number of people, I don't know. It doesn't surprise me. I mean, I'm an American, for Christ's sake, and moreover, I'm an old white guy. So these are people I know.
But also, you're the author who is...
I'm not surprised.
You're the author who has most captured the various chapters and iterations of American society, too. Can I ask you about, you know, some of these races are so tied. They're so tied, and particularly in, you know, what could be very decisive states like Pennsylvania, where there is a huge or quite a significant Puerto Rican population. How did those remarks by, you know, the comedian who was roundly, I was going to say trumped, trounced, for making a very ill-advised remark about the Puerto Rican community regarding Puerto Rico as an island of garbage, and then President Biden sort of getting into bother for appearing to suggest he was calling Trump supporters garbage. How detrimental are those remarks? You know, is it that razor wire that stuff like that could flip the vote?
I don't think so. I don't think so at this late stage at all. I mean, I think Trump was going to have a hard time finding support in Puerto Rico at all. And Biden who knows what comes out of Biden's mouth next? In other words, I don't think anybody takes any of that crap seriously.
They've already made their mind up.
Well, they've made their mind up, and moreover, they're not listening.
Yeah.
And they weren't listening a lot most of the last 6 months, but they're definitely not listening now.
Can I ask you, as the great chronicler of America, you know, because a lot of Trump voters get, you know, they get accused of being fascist, they get accused of being X, Y, or Z, but what is making them vote for Trump? What is the sort of the disaffection, or what is the attraction of a candidate like Trump that that people are flocking to him, that this man could be president next week?
Well, I don't think that Trump is anything but a standard bearer here for people who have interests, people who have ideologies, people who have sentiments, people who have cynicisms, which were always inherent in the American character. And that he has simply somehow galvanized all of those heterodox people into believing that he will do for them all of the things that they wish the government to do. And that's plenty. It isn't as if they were really conservatives who don't want the government to do things, which is what old conservatives used to do. They want the government to just simply do what they want. And Trump has lied his way into causing them to believe that he will get the government to do what these various people want.
And will he? Because the government obviously is bigger than the presidency. You know, there are still going to be votes for the House, for the Senate. You know, the whole system of government has to work. The hope was the last time that the rule of law and the system of government would stand up and would stand the constitutional test. Do you think it will this time if he's elected?
Yes. Yes, I do. I don't, I mean, as bad as Trump is, I don't think that he is going to erode all of the institutions of government and basically turn us into an autocratic state. I just don't believe that. I guess I have more faith in my fellow Americans and I have more faith in the institutions of government.
Do you worry that if it's a narrow win?
To your other question, Durgle, when you ask him why Trump, how has Trump done this? He's done it in part by the fact that none of these people takes any of this stuff very seriously, except for the guys like the owner of the Washington Post who have, skin in the game. For the most part, Americans' lives are not going to change whether Trump is elected or not elected. I mean, women's rights will be shrunk. Men's rights will probably be enhanced. But for the most part, nobody takes it terribly seriously. And it's the media who take it seriously. And thank God they do.
It's such an interesting perspective, Richard Ford, because, you know, I think it is a lot of people perhaps who are disenfranchised. And of course, it's not just exclusive to the S, that the whole world has been voting this year. Can I ask you about because the polls are so close, what if it is for whoever wins? If it's a very, very narrow win, do you worry about the prospect of that if Kamala Harris is the president? Will Trump admit defeat? Will it get into a whole big circus? If it isn't a decisive win, do you worry for America and how it deals with the aftermath of a Brexit-style, very narrow win?
Well, I don't know what good worrying would do me, because I do think that if Trump loses, he will not concede defeat. And he will go to extraordinary ends to wrest the presidency away from its rightful owner. But worrying about that, I'm not going to worry about it. If it happens, then we'll see what options are available to us citizens. What I don't anticipate is neighbors taking up arms against other neighbors. Americans are generally too fat to do that, too satisfied with their lives. You talk about people being disenfranchised. There are people disenfranchised in the United States, no question about it, wrongly disenfranchised. But by and large, Americans are pretty well off, and they're not going to sacrifice that well-offness to take up arms against the nation or to take up arms against their neighbors. I just don't believe it. And maybe it's just because I'm old.
Or move to, I think you also said, or move to Bali or Connemara. You're always very, very welcome, Richard Ford, if you do ever need to come to Connemara. Listen, as always, it is just such a joy to get your insights and perspective, and we will be watching how all of those votes play out next week. But for now, Richard Ford, thank you so much, and you take care.
All righty.